It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, with a website called Ask Dr. Brown, with a Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, with a YouTube channel, Ask Dr. Brown, we get asked lots of questions, and I love them, but we're unable to take all your calls and respond to your great questions on the air, respond personally myself to all the emails or questions on Facebook and YouTube. But we're trying to take some extra time, especially that for now we've reduced radio to 1 hour a day instead of two. But we're doing live streams on YouTube and getting the message out in more and more ways. And we may re-expend our airtime in the future. We'll see. We'd love to do that. But what I'm going to do today is take a break from everything happening in the world around us. It doesn't matter what's swirling around us today. We're taking a break from that. Take a break from your calls so I can answer some of the many questions you've sent in, posted. So God willing, Friday, we'll do as normal, take all your calls. But today we're going to get to more of your questions. I think, as always, you'll find it to be an interesting and edifying show. We start with a question from James. Dear Dr. Brown, from Brandon. I'm a single 38-year-old man. I've never been married. I've need of advice. How does one stay unmarried and not lust? I'm asking God for a mate, but years have gone by. I also don't want to lust. I believe God does give you grace. I battle the fleshly desires too, though. It feels like a trap or always being caught in between worlds. If I were to do wrong things, that would be sin. But if I do it God's way, I feel isolated and cut off in a way. Thank you for your ministry. Sincerely, Brandon. Yeah, no one said it's easy. No one said that it's easy. And please don't condemn yourself if you find yourself thinking thoughts about another woman. Maybe there's a gal in your congregation and someone that loves the Lord and is an attractive woman, and you find yourself one day you're noticing, you know, she looks really nice, or you think a wrong thought about her. Don't condemn yourself as if you're the worst sinner and God now hates you and he's going to spew you out of his mouth. If in your heart you say, Lord, I don't want to have those thoughts. I don't want to look at this woman lustfully. I don't want to think these lustful thoughts. And to just notice someone that's attractive is not lustful thoughts. But if your mind goes beyond that, you're undressing her in your mind or something like that, catch yourself, ask the Lord to wash you and cleanse you, and obviously move forward forgiven. Don't condemn yourself for that. But how do you live in such a way that you're not tormented all the time? How do you live in such a way that you're not consumed by lust? That is a matter of God's grace at work in you, and then working to reprogram your thinking, working to reprogram how what you let into your mind, what you don't, meditating on the word, asking God in times alone with him to empower you to live a holy life, being in fellowship with others that love the Lord and are seeking to serve him in the same way. I don't know if you read the well-known book, Every Man's Battle, but it's one of the most recommended books on dealing with male sexual lust. And I think you'll find it helpful. You'll find it non-condemning, but helpful. Maybe you've read it 10 times already. Well, how about my book, Go and Sin No More? You'll find that helpful as well. But if you haven't read Every Man's Battle, I'd encourage you to do it. It'll make you realize you're not alone. They make you to understand that the desires you feel can be healthy desires, but because of our human sinfulness, they can be expressed in unhealthy ways and in unholy ways. And Paul does say it's better to marry than to burn, meaning burn in lust, but he does understand that those feelings and desires can be there. So don't beat yourself over the head. I'm terrible, God hates me. Don't do that. Rather, continue to press into the Lord and recognize that in Jesus you're a new creation. Recognize that in Jesus you have power to live above sin. Recognize that in Jesus you have been made holy and set apart as holy. Meditate on his word. Let that fill your heart and mind when you go to sleep at night. If you find there are things you're exposing yourself to that cultivate more lustful thoughts, cut those things out. Put them away. Fill your heart and mind with good things, with godly things, and you'll find, either dramatically or little by little, that your thought life will change and will be reprogrammed in accordance with the Word of God by the grace of God. And remember, you're not some slave to lust, filthy sinner. You're a child of God.
It's fire we want. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Michael Brown. I'm just answering your email questions, your Facebook questions, your YouTube questions. In fact, let me get to a YouTube question. And this is from GGGG. So in distinction from Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, one of the world's best boxers, this is someone else. I'm sure it's not Triple G, but this is G Triple G. Shalom, Doc. My question is, I recently saw a documentary where they tried to use the word Elohim, which is God, to smear Israel and be anti-Israel. Joshua 5, 13 and 14, Joshua asks if the angel is for Israel or with the enemy. The director of this Christian propaganda film was trying to say that it seems that even God is not for Israel because the angel answers no, but I'm the commander of the army of the Lord. They're trying to use that saying as a justification that we don't need to stand with Israel. Well, on the contrary, the messenger went on to explain how to win the battle. I wanted to know, is the Hebrew language showing anything differently or a clear understanding in response to the messenger, in response to the message that was given to Joshua? All right, number one, over and 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 over in the Bible, God says he's with Israel, he's with Israel, he's with Israel, he's with Israel. He says he who touches Israel touches the apple of his eye, that those that treat Israel severely, God will judge. Over and over and over and over and over and over and over, he says that. So many scriptures. And even the name Emmanuel is God with us. That's what it means. Passages in the New Testament where God says, I'll never leave you or forsake you. Those are quotations from the Old Testament, words that God gave to Israel. But if Israel was against him, then God opposed Israel to bring Israel to repentance. His purposes for Israel, Paul says in Romans 11, 28 and 29, are irrevocable. In other words, even if Israel sins, even if the Jewish people become an enemy for the gospel, they're still loved on account of the fathers, on account of the patriarchs, and they are still chosen. Yes, chosen and accountable. Romans 2 says that judgment will come first to the Jew and blessing will come first to the Jew. So that's the blessing of being chosen. That's the price of being chosen. And God is clear that when Israel sins against him, that he will oppose Israel. So if Israel is against him, he will be against Israel. Why? To bring Israel to repentance, to thwart them in their ways of sin, so that he can bless them. His determination is to bless. And what he's telling Joshua, there's no ambiguity in the Hebrew. It's equally clear that in this particular situation, are you for us or for our enemies? Neither, because Joshua doesn't know who he is. He thinks he's some soldier or some angelic being. He doesn't know who he is. And when he speaks and reveals that he's bearing the very presence of God and that he is there for God's purposes, then Joshua bows down and submits to that. So God will oppose Israel just like God opposes the proud. So let's take a proud Christian. Is God for that believer? Yes, he is. He's for that believer. He wants that believer to be conformed to the character of Jesus. He's made eternal promises to that believer. But while that believer is in pride, God will resist him. If he repents of that pride, God will bless him. If he humbles himself, God will give him grace. So it's the same with Israel. God's eternal purposes are absolutely for Israel and absolutely set aside for Israel's well-being. But when Israel is in sin, God opposes Israel. And again, Joshua 5, I'm here to do the will of the Lord. You get on God's side and you'll be blessed. That remains true for Israel to this day. But to use it to say that God's not with Israel, what do you do with the rest of the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament as well? All right, let's see. This is Julio. I'd like to know your perspective on the following. After Jesus was resurrected and ascended to heaven, given us the Great Commission, and the gospel was preached for the first time to the unsaved on that day of Pentecost, Acts 2, and thereafter, knowing that the following things occur in and with baptism, and understanding that there's only one baptism, when does one receive salvation, after or before baptism? So here's what's listed here. Receiving forgiveness of sin, Acts 2, 37, 38. Gift of the Holy Spirit for the first time, Acts 2, 37, 38. Washing of sins, Acts 22, 16. burial of the old man, Colossians 2:12, Romans 6:3 6, that being born again, John 3:5, being justified and sanctified, Romans 6:7, spiritual resurrection, Colossians 2:12, putting on of Christ, Galatians 3:27, as a result of all this salvation, Mark 16:16, 1 Peter 3:21. You're asking me a question, but you have your position. Your position is salvation occurs with baptism. You hold to baptismal generation. I categorically reject that. Why do I categorically reject that? Because of the fact that baptism is symbolic. Baptism is symbolic of the washing away of sins. Baptism is symbolic, as Peter says in 1 Peter 3, of the cleansing of the conscience. Baptism is symbolic, Romans 6, of dying to sin and rising in new life in the Messiah. And Paul makes plain, and elsewhere we see that when one comes to God in repentant faith, asking God for forgiveness and mercy, God grants it right then and there. And there are other passages that make that plain. So just like the tax collector in Luke, the 18th chapter, when he beats his breast and says, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. He goes back to his house justified. Well, you had ritual purification. You had water baptism in those days, but he didn't have to do it. That was understood. So being born of water and the Spirit, yes, this is part of the new birth. Some take water to mean something other than water baptism, but even we accept that, it is an essential part of it, or obedience. It is part of the act of obedience in believing. And if someone believes and refuses to be baptized, I question the depth of their believing and the depth of their faith. But baptismal regeneration is not taught. There's not a letter in the New Testament where it's taught. And it's explained that we have been justified by faith and our works now prove our faith. It does not say we are justified by baptism. I know you quoted verses as if that was the case, but the Bible, show me a verse that says you are justified by baptism. All right, it's not there. You're justified by faith, and baptism is an act of obedience. Now, you're 100% right that much of the church today has downplayed the importance of it. You're absolutely right that much of the church today has not recognized how foundational this is. But baptismal regeneration, that you are born again through baptism, is not a New Testament concept. All right, Facebook question. Linda, do you think inner healing and healing of memories is psychology? Well, first, not all psychology is wrong and bad. Just like a medical doctor studies the human body and understands how things work in the human body, psychologists studies the brain and the human mind. Yes, there are neuroscientists that specifically study the brain, but study the psychological part of the human being is how I should put it. And they may have great insights. Just like a medical doctor knows, okay, you have this pain here, it sounds like this. So a psychologist can say, yeah, this is your problem. I've literally dealt with 500 people with the same patterns of thought. And were you raised like this? Yeah. Was your mother like this? Yeah. Was your father like this? Yeah, same pattern. They can recognize that. So can a psychologist help you get to the root of struggles on the inside of you? Jesus said he came to heal the brokenhearted. Can a psychologist help in the natural to help someone deal with things? Yeah, absolutely. There are things that can be done in the natural that have profound psychological, emotional effects on people. And look, I remember my dad met a psychologist years ago and said to the guy, he said, you know, I want to quit smoking cigarettes, because my dad had been smoking cigarettes since he was a little boy. And at this point, what, he must have been in his 40s. And he said, you know, I've heard there's some type of hypnosis you can do. And, you know, could that help with cigarette smoke? And the psychologist was a bit rude to my dad. He said, basically, you know, you're being a baby. Just give it up. I'm going to stop smoking. And my dad did. He walked out of there and gave up a cigarette addiction of, I don't know, 35, 40 years. In that case, the guy kind of shocked him into doing it. That's the opposite of what you're asking here. But I have no problem. I have no problem with a secular psychologist being able to have insight into how the human psyche works and help someone with better thought patterns or even deal with bad memories. Now, that being said, do I believe this can be done by a gospel counselor? Of course, absolutely. Why wouldn't a gospel counselor have insight into our emotional makeup, into our psychological makeup? Why wouldn't they have insight into how the Holy Spirit can come and say, okay, the reason you're upset today is because you've suffered from rejection from when you were 4 years old and those kids rejected you. And next thing you're weeping and sobbing and God's pouring out his love on you. It's like, yes, that's the root of it. It goes back that deep. And God's saying, well, I accept you. I accept you in my son, Jesus. You're mine. You belong to me. So yes, of course, it can be done in the godly way. At the same time, absolutely, it can be done in a secular way that is destructive, or a way that relies on things that I would question as far as the gospel. But generally speaking, can it be something that's related to the gospel? Sure, why not? All right, friends, we'll be right back today, a special broadcast on The Line of Fire, answering your email questions, your Facebook, YouTube questions as well.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. I'm not giving out the phone number because this is a special broadcast. You're listening to it. You're watching it on YouTube. The reason we're doing this is there are so many of you that send in questions that are unable to call. We can't get to all the calls as well. So I want to answer some of your interesting email questions, some of your Facebook questions, some of your YouTube questions as well. Hey, let me just mention this. This is a great way to stand with us. If you say, Dr. Brown, we appreciate what you do. Mike, we're blessed by what you do, and we want to stand with you. Well, praying for us is obviously the number one thing, but why not go to our GoFundMe page? Here's the website, GoFundMe.com, and then / Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown Studio. Got that? GoFundMe.com / Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown Studio. Watch the video there. In fact, if you're watching on YouTube, we'll show it to you on YouTube during this next break. And get behind us. Every gift, large or small, makes a difference. And so much of what we're able to do today and putting out by video and improving the quality of what we do and improving the quantity of what we do and then sharpening everything we do, it's all through your help. It's all through your help. We don't have independent, wealthy people that are backing us. If God raises it up, trust me, we'll use the money to reach millions more people in millions more ways. So this is you. You're helping us to give more away to more people and helping us extend a helping hand. So thank you for your partnership. All right, let's go here. This is to Rick. I feel like Satan is really ramping up his activity in these last days. Am I accurate? It seems that even intelligent Christian people are being transformed into something different as Satan is working his way into their lives, attitudes, and belief systems. Is this an accurate depiction of what is going on? Thanks, Dr. Brown, for all you do. Yes, there's no question that there is heightened satanic activity, or at least the manifestation of it, in many lives in America today and Europe today, that there's more hostility towards God, that there's more falling away from the faith, that there's more confusion within the church, that there's more anarchy and madness in the society. Yes, for sure. No question in terms of what we're seeing. However, it doesn't mean, and you didn't ask this, but I want to say this, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily the final deception. There have been many seasons of darkness that were then followed by great awakening. There have been seasons of apostasy in certain parts of the world, and the church there has never really recovered. There are others where the church went through a dark time and is stronger and more vibrant today than ever before. So I recognize this as a time where we need to be extremely vigilant. Hey, look, let's just put spiritual things aside. Let's go back to when I got saved in 1971. If, let's say, pornography was a temptation for me, which it wasn't because it just wasn't around. It wasn't around much in my world. Yeah, sure, I had lustful thoughts and was a sinner, right? But when I came to faith, this was not ubiquitous. This was not found everywhere. None of my friends subscribe to Playboy, which would have been the one way to see it. If there were movies, pornographic movies or something like that, I didn't know about it, but if they were, I had to be 18 to get into them. So or strip clubs or something like that. So I'd never been in any of those places. So obviously, the availability of those things was scarce, right? Well, now it's everywhere. It just, you know, when I go through my inbox every day, multiple times during the day, but then a few times a day, I'll check my junk folder. And there's always some, you know, sexy lady, this or that. You just delete them all, of course, because I'll look for the junk folder in case someone's writing to me that I don't have in my address book. There's all the stuff just literally pop, pop, knocking at your door. And, you know, you go to a website, you're just reading the news or sports, and there's some sensual woman in a bikini or something like, you know, picture like that. It's the advertising is everywhere. And of course, on the magazines and stores, that's been for years. But I'm talking about all pornography, stuff that, as far as I know, you would have had to go to some theater to see before to watch, or some porn shop and get a DVD, that now it's just on internet, available for anyone. A little kid can get exposed to it. So we've got to be more vigilant. Now, I've ministered in Italy on 25 different trips. I've preached there hundreds of times. But in point of fact, one time when we were in Italy, Nancy was with me with some friends and one of our daughters. And some of the team went to visit Pompeii. And Pompeii was destroyed by a volcano, as you know. But it's vulgar. I didn't go that day, but they came back with reports saying, you know, stuff is just covered. You can't just even look at it. But it's unbelievable how sexually vulgar the place was. And then many say that's why it was destroyed by fire. The point is, there have been times in history where things have been more vulgar, where things have been more sexually explicit. Now, because of internet, things are ubiquitous in terms of availability. But there are times when, yeah, it's just a lot of junk going on. So be vigilant. Be specially extra vigilant. And I would say that's, in that sense, a great question, but a no-brainer in terms of how we need to respond. Okay, Polo asks this. Dr. Brown, what do you think of Christian musicians? This is a Facebook question. Musicians and singers teaming with secular musicians and singers. Well, it depends on what they're doing. Do you team with non-believers in the workplace? If you're an athlete, do you work with non-believers on your team? Are there different things you do with non-believers? Now, you wouldn't team with a non-believer, say, to preach the gospel because that person doesn't know the Lord. But maybe you go into an audio store, you need new mics and audio equipment for your church building, you're moving to a new building and need an audio expert. Well, an audio expert may come in that's not a believer. And that auto expert will lay out everything in the building, and that's fine, right? Now, some people think that music always has to be sacred, and that any type of music is always gospel music, and therefore for a Christian musician to team up with a secular musician or singer, that's wrong. For some, that may be the case. The question is, what kind of music is it? If you are, say, a studio jazz musician, and you're a Christian, and you're that's how you make your living as a studio musician, well, what's wrong with that? Unless the lyrics, you know, maybe there were lyrics to a song and they were ungodly lyrics and you said, hey, I can't do that song. Or maybe it was, you know, some hardcore hip hop rapper or whatever, some heavy metal group with some satanic lyrics. They want you to play, say, nah, sorry, I can't do that. But that would be the same with any other area of life. If there's a seminar, for example, on how to write music, or a seminar on guitar mastery, or a seminar on musical composition and things like that, and secular musicians and Christian musicians or singers team up and work together, well, why not? It's educational. But if it's bringing the gospel, then you want to bring the gospel, and you want to do that in as pure a form as possible. And if something causes you to compromise your standards, if you have to do things that before the Lord are compromised, then obviously you can't do that. But Christian musicians have said, how do we make a living? This is our gift, this is our area of expertise. When we're told we can't do this because it's not all Christian. Well, I don't think it has to all be Christian as long as it doesn't get you to compromise values. Hey, everyone watching on YouTube, make sure you watch this video and then respond as you're able. My appreciation in advance. We'll be right back.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. We're taking a break from all the world events swirling around us. We're taking a break from your many phone calls because so many write in with email questions and post questions as we're doing live feeds, a live audio feed on Facebook, a live video feed on YouTube. Questions are posted there. So we're devoting today, we'll do this here and there to get to more of your questions. As always, on Friday, we will do our best to get to as many calls as possible. So I'm not giving out the phone number now, but I just want to say this one quick thing. I take this opportunity to be with you on the air through the spoken word, through the visual word, and also at different times through the written word. I take this very seriously before the Lord. It's a sacred responsibility and a joyful one to me. And I can't tell you how gratifying it is when I meet folks as you come up to me at different meetings and tell me that you watch on a regular basis or listen on a regular basis or read on a regular basis what we put out, because we're doing this for you. We're doing this to serve you and bless you. And funds that come in enable us to do this more. So the more funds that come in, the more that we reach more people and we can give away more free material to reach more people. So thank you for your words of encouragement. And I hope that we're an encouragement to you. And a reminder, if you don't subscribe to our YouTube channel, really encourage you to do so today. So on YouTube, it's Ask Dr. Brown Videos. So if you go to youtube.com/AskDrBrownVideos, youtube.com/AskDrBrownVideos. Yes, this way you can subscribe every day possible. We do a live stream of the broadcast, and then we put out additional videos, answers to your Bible questions, cutting-edge commentary on what's happening in society around us, debates that we've done. We post those special messages. So be sure you subscribe. This way you won't miss anything. And if we've been a blessing to you, tell a friend so we can give away more and touch more people. Here's a Facebook question from Lane. Dr. Brown, could you please speak to the hyper grace question as it relates to scriptural emphasis on some scriptures to the lack of mention of balancing ones? Yeah, it's a serious problem. Many years ago, I was working out with weights a little bit. And, you know, I'm working on my arms and shoulders and chest. And a guy said to me, you gotta work on the legs. You can't neglect the legs. And he said, otherwise, you'll have an upper body like Tarzan, arms like Tarzan, and legs like Jane. It's just an old gym joke, I guess. For those that find that overly sexist, it's a little joke, all right? And the fact is, though, Paul writes in Romans 11:22 that we should consider the sternness and kindness of God, that we can emphasize God's love to the point that there's no wrath. We can emphasize God's wrath to the point that there's no love. Yes, you can exaggerate anything. You can exaggerate grace until there's no justice. You can exaggerate justice till there's no mercy. And this is a big problem in the hyper-grace camp. Many beautiful, wonderful scriptures are pointed to and emphasized that are wonderful and life-giving. But Jesus makes plain in Matthew 28:20, that to make disciples, one thing that we must do is use his teachings. And he's talking about his prior teachings in the Gospels, teaching them to observe everything I commanded you. So this is essential and tremendously important. I emphasize it at length in my book, Hyper Grace, that when the teachings of Jesus and the Gospels are cut out, how unhealthy that is for us as believers. When the Old Testament is basically relegated to, boy, that was bad back then, and that was a bad God. Now we have a bad, I mean, almost that blatantly, how unhealthy it is. And even other parts of the New Testament neglected as well. When you just focus on part of the writings of Paul, and that's basically all you do, it will be spiritually unhealthy and can lead to serious deception and error. If you've not read my book, Hyper Grace, I strongly encourage you to do so. We'll be back with more of your questions right here on The Line of Fire.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on this special edition of The Line of Fire. You know, some nights I am so consumed with things that are laid on my heart and so many issues going on in the society that I could write 3, 4, 5 articles. Just it's like, okay, let me slow down and really pray. And sometimes I've done that. Okay, Father, what's on your heart? What would you like me to write about? What would you like me to address and focus on that? So much is going on. But right now, today, we're taking a break from breaking news, everything happening all around us in the world, and answering your questions. Okay, this is from Mark. Dear Dr. Brown, I'm struggling deeply with all the information out there regarding biblical history. I was hoping with your expertise, experience, and devotion to Christ, you could help. I recently came across an author named Jonathan Gray who wrote Dead Men's Secrets. The book concentrates on pre-flood civilizations and artifacts. I know it does not muddle with salvation. It does not carry that kind of weight. I'm trying to find out whether this author is legitimate. I don't have the resources or expertise to figure this out. Can you please give your opinion of this man? There is too much info out there for laymen like myself. I really believe that the history of the earth should be discoverable through the Bible. Please let me know what you think. I have a deep respect for your show and work. Otherwise, I would not ask. I know you're busy, so I appreciate your response. Thank you so very much with 4 exclamation points. Well, hey, thank you for your kind words, and I'm glad we've been of help to you. So I have not been familiar with Jonathan Gray, all right? I am deeply familiar with biblical history and deeply familiar with ancient Near Eastern backgrounds that surround biblical history. And I can tell you that the Bible stands out. The more you see the backdrop, the more you learn about other cultures, the more you read the ancient religious literature from other religions, the more you see how the Bible shines out in distinction from its backdrop to the point you think, where'd this come from? Where did Genesis 1 come from when you compare it to the other ancient Near Eastern creation accounts? I talk about that, in fact, in Saving a Sick America. So here's what I do when I don't know who someone is. Well, first thing I'll do is you mentioned the book, Jonathan Gray. So I'll go to Jonathan Gray, Dead Men's Secrets. Now, let me just say this. I had not heard of him. I had not heard of him before as a biblical scholar or anything like that. Now, he's mentioned here as an archaeologist. That's how his book is referenced at Amazon. So I'm looking at this as we go. I noticed it's published by Teach Services. That's interesting. Not familiar with Teach Services, but the point is it's not, to my knowledge, a major academic publisher. That would get my attention. So then I'll see if I can search within the book here online, which it's not letting me do. So what I'll do is I'll look at some of the reviews. And most of the reviews are very positive, but that could simply be because the author hits on all kinds of interesting conspiracy theories. So looking there, and what's the main claim? Jonathan Gray's books and information are always excellent, very informative, highly recommended for those looking for truth, willing to go outside the comfort zone of social programming. It's amazing to read that what goes around comes around, meaning that there really isn't anything new under the sun. Jonathan does a good job of highlighting technology that existed before and is finally being discovered again today. Very good read. It's a sad commentary on how this information isn't taught in the education system, interesting theories covered, etc. What's my problem with this? But my problem with this is anything that tells you that information is being suppressed, anything that tells you that there are all these secrets from early history and the Bible's not telling you or scholars are not telling you, that's my problem. So I just on the fly here looking at this, can't say anything definitive. There's almost nothing in the Amazon description. That may not be the author's fault. There may be other reasons for that. But when I'm looking at titles, Forbidden Secret, Dead Men's Secrets, and things like that, tantalizing hints of a lost super race. Okay. According to everything I know, this is myth. According to everything I know, based on the little information I see here. So again, I'm not intimately familiar with what's being presented. But to the best of my knowledge, if he's claiming that there was a lost super race here on the earth, that is as bogus as ancient aliens. All right. As far as I know, this is as bogus as Ancient Aliens. This is without having read the book, but looking at the claims that are being made. If I'm able to look at it more, I will. But I'm sure you understand that we have thousands of requests on a regular basis. Please watch this video. Please read this book. Please look at this. And I'd love to do it all and learn for myself and see what I agree with and disagree with. Can't do that, obviously. But I would not give this a second thought, to be honest. If I'm rightly understanding the claims, I would not give this a second thought. Normally, by getting online, searching on Amazon, I can begin to see book descriptions, and then I can begin to see publishers, I can begin to see critical interaction, I can see lists of reviews, and within a few minutes, I can then gather more information and form the beginning of an educated opinion of how I should approach the material, how seriously I should take it or not, and then evaluate it from there. Okay, Andrew. Hello, Dr. Brown. I love your ministry and thanks to your contributions to the body of Christ. Thank you, Andrew. My question is in response to your article, No, God Did Not Prescribe the Use of Cannabis in the Bible on the stream. If you didn't read that, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and just search for the word cannabis. I'm against the use of marijuana. However, a professing believer I know on social media endorses the use of medical marijuana. He even posted an article on his page that said if Christians are to be against marijuana because of what it does to the body, then we might have to protest against cheeseburgers as well. I need help. How do I respond to that? I don't know. Thank you, Dr. Brown. First, yeah, let's protest against cheeseburgers. They're unhealthy. I don't recommend them. Yeah, I agree. Our American diet is messed up. It's deadly. It's hurting us. It's causing rampant obesity and heart problems, and even many cancers are related to it. I know that because by God's grace, I was able to change my lifestyle a little over 3 years ago, 100% radical change. Nancy and I tell the story of that in our book, Breaking the Stronghold of Food. And on a regular basis, we hear from folks with amazing testimonies of life transformation, getting off diabetes medication, getting off heart medication and different things, simply through putting into practice what we learned and what we share in the book, Breaking the Stronghold of Food. So yeah, I'm not saying it's a sin to eat a cheeseburger. I'm saying if that's a regular part of your diet, it's unhealthy and you're hurting your body and you're going to have health problems because if you have cheeseburgers and fries every day, you'll pay for it. You're sowing bad stuff into your body. This is a fact. God made stuff better and put it in nature, but not everything in nature is healthy. There are poisons in nature as well. So as far as the cheeseburger thing, yeah, I agree. I was a pizzaholic. I was a chocoholic. I weighed 275 pounds in less than 8 months. I lost 95 pounds. My blood pressure went from 149 over 103 to 100 over 65. My cholesterol went from a high of 230 with the bad being high and the good being low, went down to around 123 with the good being excellent and the bad being where it's supposed to be. I used to have headaches 3-4 days a week. Haven't had a headache in over 3 years. Used to have constant lower back pain. Haven't had that. Was on a breathing machine for sleep apnea. The doctor said there was no cure for that. And when I lost all this weight, it was explained to me that it opened up breathing passage just that much, like that fraction of an inch, you know, went off the back of my tongue and the roof of my mouth, and hence I can breathe better. So anyway, so I'm with him on that. But a medical marijuana, I do not have the expertise to address. From what I know, it's often abused. Just like their pain prescription pills that are abused, many people get addicted on those things. So I know there are issues and dangers with it. And it can be impairing in different ways to the sharpness of our vision, driving and things like that. So I have questions about it. I have read stories of people that said it's the only thing that got them through their cancer treatment. And I have a friend with a little child that's had many seizures. And once they got them on this medical marijuana prescription, you know, very little child, infant, toddler, the seizure stopped, and it's made a big difference in the kid's health. So I'm not here to universally condemn medical marijuana. Let the medical experts, in particular Christian medical experts, debate that. What I am saying is recreational marijuana is wrong for many reasons, and God did not prescribe it in the Bible. Let the medical marijuana be addressed by others. But I fear that many who are addressing medical marijuana and arguing for it are also arguing for it because they want to smoke it recreationally. And I don't care if it's legal in your state, I still strongly recommend against it, unless you can get high and practice, be sober and vigilant at the same time. Yes, a little sarcasm there. But thank you for the question, Andrew. Let's see. We come back. I've got a question from Jose on Facebook. Hosea 9:15, does this mean that God can stop loving people? And Roy, regarding your Sabbath question, be sure to look at my videos on the Sabbath at askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. We don't take questions on the air about Sabbath normally because we've answered it so many times. But Serge, we've done some mini debates with Seventh-day Adventists online. We've talked to others about Sabbath. So just go to askdrbrown.org and search for Sabbath. But I'll give you a quick answer to your question, which is a bit different. We'll be right back. More to come.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, have you posted your review to Saving a Sick America yet on Amazon? If not, please do. If the book blessed you, take a minute. It can be a one-line review. It can be a full paragraph. But take a minute to do it if the book has blessed you. This is a great way of giving an endorsement to encourage others to read it. And then this hasn't happened yet with Saving a Sick America, at least to my knowledge. But often, because I write lots of controversial books or I take stands on controversial issues, people will blast me and they'll post bogus reviews or hateful reviews just to be spiteful. So if you haven't posted your review yet, do it. If you don't have the book, savingasickamerica.com. You can watch the trailer there. You can find out more about the book, savingasickamerica.com. Order your copy. We're hearing great, great reports from readers. They're finding it incredibly educational, super eye-opening, and absolutely hope-giving and hope-filling and practical as well. All right. So Hosea's question, and what I'm going to do is get Hosea chapter 9, verse 15 up on Bible software that I use so I can have it in the Hebrew and then the ancient Greek and Aramaic translations. And then in multiple versions, if I want to. And this way, if it's a verse I need to dig into it a little bit more, if I don't have it memorized in Hebrew or not familiar with the Greek, then we can do it. So Hosea 9:15, I'll read from the NET. Because they're all their evil in Gilgal, I hate them there. On account of their evil deeds, I will drive them out of my land. I will no longer love them. All their rulers are rebels. Great, great question. And I'm confident that looking at the Hebrew, it's not going to be dramatically different. But here, looking in the New Jewish translation, okay, so I'm looking at the Hebrew, all right? And the Hebrew does use the words hate and love, all right? Kisham Snetim, there I hated them. Lo Osif Ahavatam, I will not continue their love. So that is how it's, the Hebrew reads directly. But the New Jewish Publication Society version, also known as the Tanakh, Tanakh just means the Hebrew Bible, but it's also the name of a translation, the best Jewish translation of the Hebrew scriptures. There it's translated, all their misfortune began at Gilgal, for there I disowned them. For their evil deeds, I will drive them out of my house. I will accept them no more. All their officials are disloyal. So this can be read on three different levels, potentially. I'm not saying they're all right. I want to give you three possible viewpoints. One viewpoint is that God stops loving people, that he loves them, but when they act a certain way, he stops loving them and hates them. I don't see that as a scriptural concept. All right, here's what I see. Second possibility, that God expresses love, that God expresses kindness, mercy, solidarity, as his people seek to follow him and humble himself before them. But when they act wrongly and continue to sin, he utterly rejects them. He stands against them. All right, so I see his posture towards us, not his overall standing, because he says in Ezekiel 18 that he takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but rather that they would turn and live. And he says to Israel, turn back and live. All right, so that's his posture. He wants to see us saved. 1 Timothy 2, he wants all men to be saved. Jesus expressing his heart in Matthew 23, how often I long to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you weren't willing. Leadership of Jerusalem, you weren't willing. But his heart is going out in love. He says, I believe in Jeremiah 31, as often as I spoke against you, my heart went out to you, because he still had that affectionate love. And yet, the God who loves us 24/7 can at times, say in the history of Israel, stand against and say, you're not my people and I stand against you. So that brings us to the third thing. Does it literally mean hate as I loathe everything about you? You are evil and wicked and everything about you. I believe God does hate in the sense of loathing. Evil is a moral hatred, but it could well be translated as the NJPSV translates it with disowned. In other words, hate meaning reject. The woman who is rejected in the divorce is snua. She is literally hated, but it means rejected. And that, I think, is a fair nuance. So does God love someone one day and hate them the next? In that sense, I don't see it. And a Calvinist would say he's eternally set his love on some and his hatred on others. But while we were in sin, he hated our sin and hated what we were doing, and there was a moral rejection of us. But I see this more as his actions towards us, loving actions versus actions of judgment, and that's what is being expressed. And Roy's question, also on Facebook, any difference from the Sabbath ritual and Sabbath rest mentioned in Hebrews 4? So in other words, is Hebrews 4 saying that there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God, meaning the actual day of Sabbath set aside? Is that what's being said? Or is it saying we found our rest in the Messiah and therefore we don't need that seventh day? I do not take Hebrews 4 as saying you should keep the seventh day Sabbath. I see it as saying that there was a rest prophesied to Israel that is found in the Messiah. It was not saying don't keep the seventh day Sabbath. And these were Jewish believers. Of course, they would keep the seventh day Sabbath. I understand it as pointing to the rest that we find in the Messiah, not debating whether we should keep the Sabbath or not. I hope that answers your question. Do I have time for one more? Okay, this is, all right. No, I answered that one's Rick. Okay, this is Corey, a yoga in public elementary school. So appreciation, thanks so much. Thank you for your kind words. I'm a substitute teacher and have recently been asked through lesson plans to have the children grades 1 and 2 view a children's yoga program on YouTube, complete with Namaste and Om. I was able to get out of it by closing the webpage the teacher had ready for me, but I can't continue to do this without running into some problems, not to mention feeling comfortable with this roundabout way of getting out of it. Can you offer me any advice how I can deal with this situation? I would so appreciate it. Yeah, this is Eastern religion. Talk to Indians. Go to India and talk to Indians about yoga. All right. Now, let's get aside from, can you just use some of the breathing exercises or the physical positions? Let's put that aside. This is bona fide yoga, Eastern religion, Om, the whole bit, meditation, whatever. They are asking you to teach religion. I would go to them and say, I'm sorry, I can't do this. But I would first call the Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's how you contact them. TellADF.org, TellADF, Alliance Defending Freedom, TellADF.org. Contact them and let them know what's happening. I do not believe the school has the right to ask you to do this. And I would say you need to come up with another lesson plan, because as a Christian, this is a violation of your faith. And it would just be like asking a Muslim to go into the class and teach Christianity. If they say, no, it's just yoga. It's just, okay, find something else for physical activities for the kids or whatever you want to convey. But this is Eastern religion. It is Hinduism coming in one way or another through yoga, and therefore don't do it. But get your legal rights first, understand those, and this way the school cannot treat you unfairly without repercussions. All right, we're out of time. AskDrBrown.org, askdrbrown.org is the place to go. Thanks for standing with us.